upon their arrival was almost unspeakable.
We are all evil in some form or another.
I'm not guilty.
The dead won't bother you. It's the living you gotta worry about.
If I couldn't keep them there with me whole, at least I felt that I could keep their skeletons.
Hello and welcome to the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. I'm Vicky.
I'm Rachel.
We're back again.
Hi.
Rachel's back too.
I'm back. I'm here.
Thank you for
you
coming.
Can't get rid of me.
Coming back in the studio. You never left. You just been sleeping here.
Yeah, I live here, right under the desk. I carved out a little nook.
You kept telling me you wanted to get away from your family, and
easy.
Then
I haven't seen them in weeks.
Here. I mean, this honestly, this behind me is a huge closet. Have you ever?
Oh my God! I thought that was a window. That's no. Literally a closet. That's where
it's
I've been
literally
sleeping.
A closet, and that's where Rachel's been sleeping.
That's where the ghost is.
We have a great show for you today. If this is your first time listening, a special hello to you.
Welcome.
We are not going to delay. We'll just head right over to
We're
the newsroom.
Who delays? Unfit to breathe, our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad.
This week, our news comes to us from New Mexico, where some, shall we say, interesting teaching techniques are being brought to light in a new civil lawsuit that has been filed. So this comes from NBC News. So apparently, in a class at Volcano Vista High School in Albuquerque...
Volcano Vista.
Yeah, right. And this was in May 2022.
Okay.
Says that a chemistry teacher...
Did he put the kids into a volcano?
No. Okay. So he basically made two kids fight with like rapiers and swords.
Oh,
did you hear about this?
I did see this.
Yeah. So essentially, this chemistry teacher, Loviata Mitchell... It says Mitchell took katana and rapier-style swords to school that day, had students rearrange desks to form a ring in the middle of class, and had pairs of pupils square off. And...
Sir.
The two high school students that are filing this lawsuit say they got called in to fight, and one of the students struck the other across her right forearm, wrist, and hand with a katana-style sword, saying that this person suffered a large and deep laceration across her right hand and wrist that
I
is
would imagine so.
inconsistent with a prop sword, claiming that these are actually, like, not props,
they
that they're just,
real?
Like, real fucking swords.
Oh.
And she was 16 at the time that this happened. The suit also says that when it became... clear that there was injury. Mitchell, the teacher, screamed, "I'm in trouble," and ordered the students to delete any videos they shot of the fights.
I'm in trouble.
She, Mitchell did also not immediately call 911. It took 20 minutes for the guardian of the student to be notified of the accident.
God.
They finally called 911 like 30 minutes after the initial like wound. And they took her to an emergency room. So
they think that, like, she was in the nurse's office and she was like, take a Tylenol and lay down. Shut up.
Right. Yeah. I don't know.
School.
And also, there was part of me that's like, so the chemistry teacher is, like, using katanas as, like, a learning aid? Like, what?
Yeah. When I was, like, because I didn't remember that it was, I have heard of this case. But
yeah.
I didn't know that it was a chemistry teacher. I kind of thought, like, oh, maybe it's like for gym or like for theater or something.
So, excuse me. According to a school report that was included in the suit, the assistant principal described it as a lesson on metal and melding when the student accidentally cut the other student with it.
Oh, whatever. That is so.
Also said that there weren't any school rules violated. The student who got injured had to obviously have surgery and do physical therapy.
Right.
There's also obviously mental health things that stemmed from this.
Your teacher's just enacting battle royale in the classroom.
Yeah. Now, I will say this teacher, Mitchell, was fired in July 2022. They didn't say why, but she was
probably
fired.
Probably not related.
Yeah. But this lawsuit has been filed now in New Mexico against these. It's
okay. Well, I hope that these students get literally so much money. Because this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You snuck real, even if it's a replica, like I go to the Renaissance Fair. There's stuff that even if it's a replica, if it looks real, you're not even allowed to carry it around.
Yeah.
You snuck real swords into a school and made your students get the fuck.
I don't even know if it's sneaking is the right word. Probably just carried them in.
Yeah, that's also worse. As a teacher. Worse.
Like, you know what I mean? Just like,
nobody was like, swords, hey, what do you have
oh, hey,
those
what's
for?
Up, Miss Mitchell? Nice
hey,
swords.
Nice katana.
Cool. Have a great day.
Just get that minted? Wow. Yeah. Minted's not the
TGIF,
right word.
TGIF, am I right?
You know, crazy, like these crazy kids.
My God. Yeah. So that's happening. We're going to move along to Netflix and Kill, which this week is another Max and Kill. We are talking about The Truth About Jim, which I have some mixed feelings on, which is not normally I'm always like, this was great. This is fun. This is cool. So for a little background, Truth About Jim is a 4-part docuseries on Max. It sort of follows this woman named Sierra Barter and her mom, Shannon Barter, and her grandmother, Judy Mordecai, as they sort of start investigating Sierra Barter's grandfather, Judy Mordecai's former husband, Jim Mordecai. They start looking into whether or not he could potentially be a serial killer, essentially.
Normal family activity.
Not just any serial killer. Ooh. I mean, there's like, okay. So there's connections to, because this is happening in California. Mm-hmm. So at the time, there was connections to the Zodiac that they sort
That's
of
what I saw.
Looked into that, spoiler alert, do not pan out.
Yeah, he's not.
But there are some other, you know, more like highway killer series that have
I thought that
been
had some
unsolved,
plausibility to it.
That they're kind of like, well, potentially like these.
Right.
So it was an interesting concept because I will say, like, in the beginning, they very much have, I mean, he is known to have assaulted young girls.
Yeah, some horrible, like, family
sort of
abuse.
Have affinity for young girls.
Yeah.
Harassing some of like the high school girls and stuff, like humiliating them in front of, he was a teacher, so like humiliating them in front of classes and stuff. He was also like known to fly into rages randomly. Like they talk about it as sort of a switch in personality where he'd be like
big red flag.
There's instances where he was like driving with one of his daughters in the car and he would just start speeding down the highway and be super angry. And you sort of have to like talk him down off of a ledge. And once you did, he was sort of like, oh, well, we're just going to like go home or do whatever.
That's,
you know what
such
I mean?
A like classic like abuse description. That's horrible.
Yeah. Almost like he wanted to see how far he could go.
Right. Pushing boundaries.
And he was married multiple times. Mm-hmm. And I think almost all of his wives said he was somewhat abusive. Not somewhat, was abusive.
Some of the accounts I read were horrible. These poor women.
So there's all of this, like, backing the sort of, so it this docuseries sort of starts out as looking at this grandfather who, when she was young, the woman who's investigating, Sierra Barter, is what I said, she doesn't necessarily know her grandfather all that well, because when she was young, by that time, her mom was like, we're not spending any time around this man.
Good.
Like, I don't want my young child around her or around him. But had these stories and this sort of like talk, because there's also like half brothers that are like uncles of hers, right? And like, because he was married a few times.
That's right.
And so there's like these siblings that she's talking to and getting stories of their childhoods with Jim and sort of like some of the abuse and things that happened. Right. It's heavy. Yeah. I will say that it's heavy.
Yeah.
Here's the deal is they do start because she does sort of get contacted by some of the students of the school. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they start making connections to potentially some of these like
unsolved
highway
murders
unsolved murders. In California, in these areas where, like, he had a family cabin and did, like, frequent. And there were points in time where he was like, I'm just going for a drive and would disappear for, like, 5 hours. You know what I mean? So they're kind of doing this investigation. It is interesting.
I was going to say, sounds pretty valid.
But here is the issue I have with it. It definitely, there was a moment when I was watching it where I was like, is this a Max original or is this a Discovery original?
Yeah.
Because they're filmed, so like Discovery owns ID. Mm-hmm. ID shows and docuseries, I feel like, have a certain way that they're filmed.
Yeah.
That almost makes it more sensational. Not to say this stuff wasn't like horrible, right? But like the way that they film it is kind of like more, I don't even know how to describe it, like almost more MTV-ish. It's kind of like...
Yeah, sensationalized, definitely.
Yeah, whereas Max stuff typically is a little more high production value, a little bit more like well cinema, put together.
Cinematography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, so I had that... The vibe just felt a little weird.
Okay.
But also, there are these points where she, as the granddaughter of this man, is talking to, like, potential victims. One of them was a woman who had been a witness to, like, prior to her friend's disappearance. Like, she had been hanging out with this friend. The friend disappears and then eventually ends up being found on the side of the road.
Uh-huh.
And she had sort of been with her the night that they met this stranger that she sort of leaves with and they presume murdered her.
Right.
And so she does this sort of like, well, here's a picture of my granddad. Does it look like this guy? Mm. And there's like...
Leading the witness.
Right. There's part of me that feels like if they wanted to ask those questions and maybe they did these things behind the scenes and then like when they filmed it, they did. But like, I don't know that you should have her specifically
on the spot like that.
Well, putting her on the spot like that, but also like asking the questions because you don't want to have, if you're truly trying to get evidence of anything, like you don't want to have bias on,
like, no offense to this granddaughter, but it's like you're not a professional.
Yeah, and she might be a journalist.
She might be a professional.
I can't remember if she, like, her profession is journalism.
Right.
Which is fine.
But yeah, I mean, there's a reason in court you're not allowed to, like, have any of the jurors know you. Personal bias is something...
And she did, at a certain point, she like connects up with this private investigator who basically tells her, okay, this is what you need to put together to take to the police.
Mm-hmm.
It was essentially a package,
very
right?
Very helpful.
To put together, to take to the police.
Yeah.
Here's the evidence that you are going to have, like the physical evidence of things. This is what's going to work. This is what's not going to work. And it shows them sort of putting it all together and getting it together and going to the police to present them to be like, potentially my grandfather is a murderer,
right?
At most, but at the very least, you know, like a serial sexual assault person, sexual assaulter. So like, I don't know. I'd like to believe that all of this is done in good faith, but there is like some kind of vibe that I'm just like, I feel a little weird about them trying
when
to
I looked
like,
it up, it did say like a lot of the reviews mentioned similar things to that.
Yeah.
That it was kind of done a little unprofessionally, maybe.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Production value. I saw a lot of those same complaints. So I'm not surprised you said that.
Yeah. So I think it is worth a watch. It's only 4 episodes, but just be aware of that stuff as you go into it and take it all with a grain of salt. Because like obviously there is very reliable, verifiable information and things that happened. But like
presented might be the best.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good to know going into it.
Yeah. So that's Truth About Jim. That's on Max. This is the part of the show where we say content may not be appropriate for all listeners. Well, we're going to be talking about some instances of murder.
Yep.
That's pretty much it.
I was going to say mine's pretty tame.
Yeah.
Well, not tame, but there's not a lot of trigger warnings anymore.
What are we talking about today, Rachel?
We are talking about, well, mine is a crime inspired by horror movies.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
Same.
Okay, good.
Same. Yeah, the media, we'll say media inspired crimes, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because this is
tricky. This was a tricky one too, because for me at least, because I feel like there's definitely a lot of instances of this happening, but like they are not necessarily the most like well researched.
Right.
So like trying to find information for your research is like a little tricky. No. Right. That happens. It's all about finding the right case. Like it's all about
That's true.
Pinpoint. I did find find something I'm pretty excited about. So
I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah,
I've always found that sort of thing really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, disclaimer before, because I'm sure this will probably come up in both of ours. I definitely don't think that if you watch horror movies, you're going to be a murderer automatically.
I also don't. Same goes for like violent video games.
Yep.
That's the one I think that really gets in my craw, because I think there's a lot of people who would like to blame something.
Right.
And there has been tons of studies.
So much.
And there's so much evidence that show.
At this point, it's so stupid to say.
That not only do they not cause violence or an excess of violence outside of normal things, but they are actually helpful for things like multitasking and
stress relief.
Stress relief. People who are like ADD or ADHD do really well because it sort of like focuses your brain on something.
Yes.
Like, there was something about, I remember there was a study they did with a kid playing a video game that it helps with learning in some kids with like ADD, ADHD because of that sort of focus component. Like, so listen, y'all.
Helps the brain multitask.
Back off the violent video games.
Yeah,
it's not that,
shut
okay?
Up. Maybe and just the movies. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Maybe just don't blame video games.
Yeah. Yeah. But the two topics of true crime and horror do tend to come together a lot, both in positive ways and negative ways. But yeah, I definitely don't think. I'm not, before we get in, I'm not blaming these movies. I'm not blaming the horror movie industry. And I think that's dumb.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
my computer was just, my computer just started playing sounds. I'm really sorry.
I was like, oh my God, do we have background music now? On a dark and stormy
night.
That
would be great, right?
That would be great. I
can't. I need to get like soundboard to do that.
Let's do that.
We'll see.
She means no.
We'll see.
So mine, I actually picked the case before I picked the topic, which is not what you're supposed to do.
Nope, that's totally fine. I do that all the time.
And the reason I picked this case is I've been really into, my husband and I have been watching a lot of interrogations.
Okay.
There's a lot of YouTube channels that we've been really into. I just really
like police interrogations?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love, there's just something so interesting to me about watching people lie when I know they're lying. So like there's certain ones that I go in if it's like a more famous case, or sometimes they'll be like, this is the murderer. But sometimes with certain channels, they present it kind of like a mystery. So you're trying to figure out like, who is lying here?
Yeah.
And it's just so, I love looking at like people's physical tells.
Yeah.
So I've been really into that. And
I do like watching like the tactics, like the interrogation tactics, because they're not always, almost never the best. Morally questionable,
right?
Ethically questionable,
right?
Things, you know,
right?
So that part of it too, I'm always like, what's happening here? But you're right.
Yeah.
Seeing people try to lie is like, well,
it's very interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see how far people will go.
Just studying up in case I ever have to be in an interrogation,
or be a murderer,
or I will never. I would never.
She would never get caught. Okay, I'm going to start this one off with a quote.
Okay.
We know if this conjures anything for you. What's your favorite scary movie?
My gosh. Classic.
With this one simple question uttered by one of the scariest horror movie villains, the white masked killer, commonly known as Ghostface.
Ghostface.
The 1996 movie Scream would catapult itself into the Horror Movie Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But nearly a full decade later, on September 22nd, 2006, the franchise, which had since spawned several popular sequels, I think they're working on number 7
I don't
now,
even,
which
it's
is
something
crazy.
Like that, yeah, I don't know.
And there's a show, there's noise outside.
Yeah, ignore that.
It's a ghost, we're being haunted. Don't worry about it.
That's my new soundboard.
Oh, I love it. Oh my God, that's great. Wow, the quality's amazing. It's like we're really in here.
Yeah.
The franchise, which had spawned several popular sequels, would again be thrust into the limelight, but not for the reasons that anyone expected.
Okay.
But what does the gruesome murder of 16-year-old Pocatello, Idaho high schooler Cassie Jo Stoddart have to do with one of the most influential movie series of all time?
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, boy.
Well, oh my gosh. One, it sparked up a connection between two teenage boys, also residents of Pocatello, Idaho.
Pocahontas,
Idaho. And I'm drunk, you guys. Sorry. And I don't drink. And fellow Pocatello, Idaho residents, classmates, and friends of Cassie Jo Stoddart. Two 16-year-old boys, Tori Adamczyk and Brian Draper.
Okay.
Both boys had a certain fondness for horror movies, and it was said Scream in particular was one of their favorites.
What a bonding movie.
I know.
What a I mean, okay. First of all, I'm just going to say Matthew Lillard.
Ooh.
Absolutely. Yes, please.
He is delicious.
I do really love him.
I do too.
And like 13 Ghosts was like the thing for me that was
so
like,
good. I really liked him in Good Girls. Did you watch that show?
No.
He was really slimy.
But now he's doing like D&D shit.
Yeah.
And making the whiskey.
Freddy Bear movie.
Yeah. The Freddy, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, yeah.
The Freddy Bear movie.
I was like, Freddy Bear. Yeah, the Bear movie. You know, that movie about bears.
You know,
it's just all about bears.
Paddington?
No. Yeah, Paddington. Paddington Gone Wild.
No, but I mean, I guess I could see how that would be kind of like a bro bonding movie.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
In a weird way. And I will say, like, I've definitely, like, befriended people, like, out and put. I have a lot of horror movie merch and sweatshirts.
Same girl.
And I was going to say I'm sitting across from someone who has the same stuff. And with your
I have a pumpkin on my pumpkin shirt right now.
I'm wearing a Beetlejuice shirt. It's fine.
Yeah.
I've definitely, like, made connections on, like, oh, you like horror movies? That's fine. So that's not necessarily that weird.
No.
And especially for, like, two teenage boys. I mean, teenagers love to get an emotional reaction out of people.
Yeah.
So being edgy, it's just kind of down for the course.
Yeah, yeah.
But these two were not interested in horror in a normal way.
Uh-oh.
They were a little bit too interested.
Oh, no.
Brian Draper, in particular, was said to have been, like, not popular, but well-known. Neither one of them were, like, popular. But he was just, you know, a guy in the school. He was but everybody knew that he liked horror movies and that he would talk incessantly about horror movies. He would take up a lot of class time talking about horror movies. And he was always carrying around his notebooks because another thing that bonded the boys was not just an interest in horror, but an interest in film.
Okay.
They wanted to be famous filmmakers. They wanted to make the next big horror movie. And actually, there was a contest, like a film festival is what I mean. So their plan was to write this movie together, shoot it. They were both going to be in it.
Discovered? Are they going to get discovered?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
You know,
big dreams when you're in high school.
Yeah,
man.
And it'll just be fine, and then you'll be famous. No problem. Don't even worry about it.
That's all it takes.
They had cast
That's why we're so famous right now.
That's why you know who we are. Our poster's up on your wall.
Oh, my God. I mean,
dust
it is up
shit.
On my wall, but
it's self-centered.
You know, it's my show, so I'm like, it's fine.
It's a great picture. So they were really, really, really into horror movies, way too into horror movies. Photos of the boys' rooms collected later for, like, police evidence showed countless videotapes, posters, and other horror memorabilia. But apart from all of the normal, you know, Scream poster, Halloween poster, whatever, they also had gloves and knives and stuff that's maybe not as common to collect.
Okay.
I would say.
Okay.
So definitely their interests were a little grosser than Scream.
Yeah.
A simple school project would unite them, turning the two 16-year-old boys into fast friends. And what's interesting is the class project, because they like kind of knew each other, but they weren't really friends. The project was between the two boys and Cassie.
Okay.
So they were all three in the project together, which I just think is horrible. And they ended up having to go to each other's houses, saw all the posters and stuff, and, oh, we both like horror movies, now we're friends.
Sure.
But they had more than just that. in common. They also had some fantasies that they ended up talking about with each other.
No. Okay.
Not only did they want to make this next big slasher movie, they kind of wanted that to be their reality.
Oh.
And within a few
Part of
weeks,
me is waiting for you to be like, they wanted to make it a snuff film.
Well.
Oh, no. So, oh, no. Oh, God. Rachel, no.
This is something I'll have to try to circle back to that later, because there's a little theory I have about the case.
Okay.
That,
I'll try to remind you at the end.
I have no evidence for it, except for just, I've never been wrong in
When
my
do
life,
we ever?
So. I've thought this for years.
Yeah.
So within only a few weeks of knowing each other, which is crazy, the two boys started planning to commit the perfect murder. They had lists of people, mostly classmates, who they wanted to eliminate. And somehow up at the top of the list was their classmate, Cassie.
Oh, no. Okay.
Cassie was a normal 16-year-old girl. She was well-liked by pretty much everyone. It didn't seem like anyone in the school had any kind of problem with her.
Yeah.
She loved animals. She was very kind to others. And she was very responsible. People would say that she seemed a little older than her years because she just had a really innate sense of what she's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So she was just this amazing person, and mm-hmm. I don't know why she was friends with these two losers. part of their filmmaking thing, another thing that Brian was known for besides horror movies, was he was always carrying a camera around because he wanted to film the horror movie. So I think there was always that kid in high school, like the kid with the prop. So it's either the kid with the guitar or the kid with the So there's countless hours of footage of him shooting through the school with the camera. And what that gave to the boys was a certain camouflage for them to be able to talk about their quote-unquote horror movie.
Yeah.
When really they were talking about the potential murder of their classmates.
Whoa. There's that a is lot. Really fucked up.
I know this isn't for everyone, but I would highly suggest looking up the footage of these. I'll put it in my show notes. There's a really good documentary that a YouTube channel called Explore With Us did that like shows a ton of their footage. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene when they're skipping class, they're in the library, and they're talking loudly to each other about like, oh, you know, we're gonna do this, and we're gonna kill these people, and we're gonna be really famous, and this is how we're gonna do it. And like a teacher walks by, another student walks by, and they're smiling and laughing. You know, it looks like just an ordinary teenage boy conversation, but it's just a shame that nobody was like, maybe don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
ew, that's weird.
That's how they kind of flew under the radar.
Yeah.
Which is not cool.
See, I feel like now that was definitely, cause you said this was what, mid 2000s, right? It was 2006
yes, this
or something?
2006. Yes.
Okay. So I do feel like that was still at a point in time where like, I don't know. I think now it would raise more red flags just because of
I think so too.
The things that have unfortunately happened in schools and the tone around conversations like that in places like that is like changed rapidly because of
You're not getting away with it now.
All the fucking school shootings and shit in America.
Oh my God.
But,
I have a lighthearted story with that to share.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
My son, my oldest son is in preschool, and he had one of those like little performances where they all sang, and it was really cute.
Okay.
Especially because they're all preschoolers, so it was like a dumpster fire. Like, my son did not sing, and he just stared at me the whole time, like getting me down from
pretty
here.
Pretty on brand.
It was great. But I was sitting with an old high school classmate who has a child in preschool as well, a little four-year-old. He was so sweet. And we had crayons at the table, and I'm kind of watching him.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing him talk to me, and I'm like, what, baby? And he's like, look what I made with the crayons. And he had arranged them into a shape. And I'm like, what did you make? And he's like, a gun. And
oh,
I'm like,
no.
Oh, honey. Yeah, we don't. I'm like, oh,
we can't.
You know,
yeah.
Let's not. And he's like four. So he's like, I made a gun. And he was just like saying it as loudly as he can. I'm like, shut the fuck up. It was so funny.
I mean, it's like talking about bombs at an airport. Like,
my brother did that when he was a kid. We were going on a trip and he was like, I have a bomb in my backpack. And I was like,
you can't do that. You cannot.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What no, you cannot kids? Do that. Yeah.
It was really funny.
Little kids will just say whatever the fuck
it was.
They want.
I love that they have no filter.
So kind of, except
the greatest.
When they point out all of your flaws and then you're like,
See, I would have to have some, I think, in order for them to
be pointed out. I wish I had your confidence, Rachel. Get out of here.
Step
you're like,
one is
I'm
lying.
Always right. I have no, I'm perfect. I am God's gift to man. Come look at me.
I've never told a lie. Except for the last 5 minutes. So these two boys, Tori and Brian, have been planning this murder, these series of murders in plain sight, because they did only end up being able to commit one murder, but the list that they had was extensive.
Oh, so they had like a full hit list.
They had a full hit list,
oh,
yes.
No.
And
okay.
In fact, this is kind of, because it's all hearsay, it's a little hard to confirm, but on the night that they did end up murdering Cassie, they were supposed to go to a different girl's house.
Yeah.
And I think they said she ended up not being home.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So you'll see as I describe it, they're really, it's sort of like they've planned it, but it's really sort of like an opportunity, like an opportunistic murder, which I guess is convenient if you've listed like so many of your classmates, you know, you're going to run into somebody in a vulnerable position sooner or later.
Right.
And this is it. So on the night of September 22nd, 2006, Cassie, who would normally be at home, is at her aunt's house. They're on a vacation.
Okay.
And she said, it's kind of a big house. It's like a nice house. If you look at like the crime scene photos, it's really nice.
Okay.
And they have a dog. So she's staying, she's watching the house, and she's dog sitting. So the plan is for her to kind of live there for a few days and then return home when her family is back in their house. But like any teenager, she's like, well, I'm going to have people over. So
of course.
She invites.
Right.
She's better than me because I would have thrown a kegger. But she invited over her boyfriend, Matt Beckham.
Okay.
And then it kind of seems, now this is subtext, but she's a teenage girl. She's alone in a big house. She's inviting over her longtime boyfriend. And then these two boys also come. Tori and Brian also come. Now, it's said that Tori and Brian and Cassie were all friends.
Yeah.
But, like, wouldn't you kind of want to be alone in the house with your boyfriend?
It I don't know.
It kind of sounds like he might have invited them, being, like, an oblivious teenage boy. Like, let's go hang out in this huge house. And she's like, I'm trying to get busy.
Right. Like,
Yeah. So that's subtext, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
I don't know. But they decided to come over and keep her company.
This is at the aunt's house, right?
At the aunt's house, yep. And since it was this big, nice house, she decided that she would give her boyfriend, Matt, and then Brian and Tori, she would give them a nice tour.
Okay.
So she took them all through the house, including down into the basement, which is going to be important later.
Okay.
Then they went up to the living room. They decided to watch a movie, Kill Bill 2. If anyone was wondering.
Okay.
It's a classic.
Not
I like
Scream,
the first
though.
One better. Yeah, not Scream.
Okay.
I wish I'm surprised, honestly. I'm like, they should have put it on.
It seemed like it would have been very, like, I don't know. They seem to have a flair for the dramatic, almost. Like, something that would look good on film. You know what I mean? Like, plot points and things.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and hey, you know, who knows? I mean, it is bloody. Movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Lots
totally.
Of slashing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Quentin Tarantino, red corn syrup squirting everywhere. So they watched part of the movie, and then Brian and Tori decided to leave early. They said that they were going to the movies.
Okay.
They were like, if we're just going to sit around and watch a movie, we're going to go and watch a movie in the theater. So we're going to go.
Yeah.
So the two boys left. Cassie and Matt stayed. Shortly after the two boys leave, the power cuts.
Oh, no.
Not only does the power cut, but they start hearing noises from downstairs.
Okay.
So obviously, poor Cassie is terrified.
Right.
And no offense to Matt, but he didn't sound like, you know, big and brave either, because all of the
still
noises.
High schoolers.
Of course. Yeah. But it's like, you know, you'd think you'd want to defend.
Maybe.
Because it did seem that all of the noises and the power going out and everything going on was kind of centered in the basement.
Okay.
Almost sort of like someone was luring them downstairs.
Oh, God.
But
oh, no.
Cassie and Matt, maybe they'd watch some horror movies themselves. They were like, no, we are not going downstairs.
Good
so they
idea.
Did. They stayed put.
Yeah.
And eventually some of the lights got turned back on. So they were like, oh, it must have just been a power outage.
Yeah, yeah.
But they kept continuing to sort of hear noises. And of course, poor Cassie is like, I don't want to stay here by myself. And so she asks her boyfriend, Matt, to call his mom, very responsible, and ask if he could spend the night.
Yeah.
It's not really revealed why. I don't know. His mom, Matt's mom, was like, I don't think so. She probably wasn't too thrilled about, you know,
no.
these teenagers.
My mom would
house.
Never
There's
in a million
no
years
oh my
when I was
God.
That age. Absolutely
Me
not.
Neither. Shout
Absolutely
out to
Eileen. Absolutely not. Yeah, right?
love her. But she did offer for Cassie to come over to their house
okay.
and spend the night. And
oh,
then
that's
she
nice.
Would drive her back early in the morning.
That's super nice.
But as we've already revealed about sweet Cassie, she was a very responsible girl.
Yeah,
and she was
yeah.
like, you know, I have the dog here. The dog,
right.
by the way, is freaked out and
yeah.
is growling at the stairs. So she's
yeah.
like, it almost seemed like, well, I have to be here for the dog. Like, the dog's upset about something.
Yeah.
But she was like, nope, I said I would do it, so I'm going to stay here.
Okay.
So
okay.
at about 10 p.m., Matt's mom came and picked him up. They said goodbye to Cassie, and they left.
Okay. Well, all right. It's not ominous.
I know. As Matt leaves, he remembers, oh, yeah, my friends are out at the movie theater. Maybe I can meet up with them. So he calls Tori to see where him and Brian are at. But it's a really weird phone call. He can't really hear Tori because Tori is whispering.
Oh.
So he keeps being like, what? Like, hello? Like, speak up? Like, where are
yeah.
you? And he's like, oh, we're in the movie right now. Which, you know, that makes sense. Obviously, don't answer your phone in the
Answering
movie theater.
Your fucking phone
don't
in the
be
movie
that
theater.
Person.
Yeah.
Hate those people.
Yeah, I agree.
But he's like, okay, you know, he's in the movie. He's whispering. He just had to answer my phone call real quick. Okay, that makes sense. Doesn't really think anything of it. He's like, okay, if they're still in the movie, whatever, I'm just going to go home. So
yeah.
he just goes home. Back to the house where now poor Cassie is all by herself. She's nervous. She ends up going all the way upstairs. She's like, I don't want to be down here anymore. Power goes out again.
Okay.
The sounds continued to be centered around the basement, including like items being thrown. It really seemed like something wanted her to go down there. But she
creepy.
Was like, yeah, I know.
This is
I
so
wouldn't.
Creepy.
It's so, I feel for her so much. She
yeah.
must have been so afraid.
Yeah.
But she stayed put in her room.
Okay.
Was just like, no, thank you. In the hallway by her room, she hears a door slam.
Okay.
And then she is ambushed by two killers
oh.
wearing black clothes. And the Scream ghost face.
Oh,
mask.
My God.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually had the ghost face masks
yep.
on.
Yep. Yes, they did.
Oof. Okay.
And she was attacked with like a dagger-like knife. They said it was kind of a particular knife and a hunting knife.
Okay.
And she was stabbed 30 times. And 12 of those wounds were considered fatal.
Oh,
so this
no.
was
yeah.
major overkill.
Yeah.
Major, major overkill.
Yikes.
This is a part in the story where it's really sad.
Yeah.
Because Cassie put up a huge fight. Huge fight. She had a ton of defensive wounds. She fought for her life. But
yeah.
in the end, she was overpowered. I think that she ended up dying of blood loss. Just
yeah.
from the multiple stab wounds.
Yeah.
But the next morning, her aunt and cousin returned home.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the cousin was pretty young,
yeah.
so they saw her. At first, they didn't even know that it was her. It's a really sad. This is, I don't ever recommend looking up things like this because I feel
no.
like it's bad for your mental health.
Yeah.
It's already
yeah.
in the toilet. So,
yeah.
But there is footage of the phone call
yeah.
of her calling in, and it's just the confusion is so heart-wrenching. It's really hard to listen to. But you can listen to it if you want to.
Yeah.
So the police, obviously, as with any woman who is murdered, they suspect her significant other first. So they brought Matt, the boyfriend, in for questioning, but he was pretty quickly ruled out.
Okay.
As being a suspect. They didn't look into him too much, but he did lead them to Brian and Tori.
Okay.
So this is what kind of interested me in this case is I was talking earlier about how I've been watching a lot of like interrogations.
Yeah.
The full police interrogation of both boys is on YouTube.
Okay.
So I watched a couple and it's fascinating.
Yeah.
If you've ever watched an interrogation of like an adult, it's really cool to see how people lie. It's so much harder when they're teenagers.
Yeah.
Their emotional patterns are so different.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
so interesting. And like, I listen, if you're a teenager, you're watching, I love you. Teenagers are dumb.
Yeah.
They don't think anything through.
Yeah.
So it's almost funny.
Yeah. Like, well, and I'm pretty sure like the part of the brain that right. develops last is deals with consequences
right.
of your
yeah,
actions.
Their prefrontal
too.
Cortex is not
so like
formed
there's also
yet.
That aspect.
It's not their well, yeah,
well
it's the murderer's
it is, but
fault.
Like,
but you know,
yeah.
it's like, okay, that
nature,
makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what?
But
if
the
you're
lying
a teenager,
aspect
just
of things,
don't murder.
Yeah.
It's just not wait till you're
just,
an adult.
If you're anybody, just don't murder.
Oh how yeah, that too.
How about that? We will not condone murder on this podcast.
Oh, we don't? Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
News to me. No, I'm
no,
just kidding.
Sorry. Did I, it was in your writer.
Oh, I didn't read it. I can't read it. So there's pretty lengthy interrogation tapes online. And it's interesting to watch like sort of the pressure turn up.
Yeah.
Because at first they're interrogated separately. I believe both boys had a parent present.
Okay.
Which is good.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I always think it's like a state by state thing, I guess.
Yes.
I've watched a few where I'm like, how is there not a parent present? And they're like, oh, this is in Florida. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I get
now
it.
I think there's rules on that.
Right.
Like more set in stone rules
yeah.
nationally. But I do think there is still like whether a parent is there uh-huh. or like an
victim's
appointed
advocate.
Guardian,
right.
a victim's advocate.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, like the sometimes, I mean, I've seen some really shitty victims.
I have too,
you know. But
me
anyway.
Too.
Anyway.
And yeah, and that's a crazy part too, is the parents like kind of realizing like, oh
yeah,
this is not this,
yeah.
these kids did that shit.
Yeah.
Both of the boys lied for hours and hours and hours, finally ended up cracking. I think the big thing besides their demeanor, because it, you know, and it's hard to tell. People lie differently, but
right.
I thought even knowing that they committed the crime, I'm like, y'all are being suspicious. They were
yeah.
not good liars.
Yeah.
So I think besides their demeanor, the thing that really had their story fall apart was the movie theater. They should not have said that they went to the movie theater because,
yeah.
spoiler alert, they
you
never
can,
went to the fucking
you can
movie
check
theater.
Check that shit. Yeah.
Right. And this was, and again, this is in 2006. So like now it would just kind of be like, oh, let me call your credit card company. Or
right.
like, let me look at the
cameras.
The cameras at the movie theater.
Yeah.
But they still were able to do pretty good investigative
yeah.
work just by being like, what movie did you see?
Yeah. Can you give me a ticket stub?
And these two idiots had not even decided
oh,
what
yeah.
movie they had
oh,
gone
God.
To see. So like, he's like, oh, it's this one movie. And he's like, wow. That the detective starts kind of having a little fun with him. He's interviewing Brian. And
yeah.
you can see, you know, they're supposed to be very serious. But that little moment of levity kind of cracked me up where he was like, wow, Brian, you went to see that movie. That's so interesting because me and my partner here, my detective, we went and saw that on our lunch break yesterday because, you know, we don't have anything to do and we're here in town. What was your favorite part?
Yeah.
He had no fucking idea.
Oh, my God.
So he starts making up this story about how he met a girl at the movie theater and he talked to her the whole time and didn't pay attention to the movie. But then they were like, what color was her hair? And he was like, God, I don't know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Terrible.
It's just, you know, digging deeper holes.
I'm like, why did you? Terrible.
Terrible.
Yeah. And then they started making up, and I think it is funny. This is very teenage, but it's also, I think, a good like summation of their state of mind of like their self-importance,
mm-hmm.
Is that when they have to lie, they come up with something that makes them sound kind of cooler. It's like, no, dude, I wasn't paying attention to the movie because I was talking to this hot chick who was
yeah.
super into me. And
yeah.
both of these boys were like kind of nerds. So
yeah.
it's like, yeah, I'm sure you were, buddy.
Oh my gosh.
And then their car was spotted like on the street.
Yeah.
Because it was like a subdivision. Mm-hmm. So they were like, why was your car there if you were at the movies? And they were like, oh, just kidding. We didn't go to the movies. We actually do carjacking. They're these two little like UV nerds. And they're like, yeah, sometimes we just break into cars and we steal stuff.
But also, I don't know that like diverting suspicion away from a more major crime to a less serious crime is like a good
It's not, but it's tactic. Actually a really common I've learned from watching these interrogations is it's really common. A lot of times when there'll be a killer and they'll be like, you killed her for sure. And it's kind of like, you did it, dude. Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
The killer will be like, well, I didn't kill her, but I did do heroin there. And so it's like, I'm admitting a shameful thing.
Like,
and
I helped move the body, but I didn't actually.
Correct.
Yeah.
That people think that if you admit something shameful, you're less likely to do it. So people are like, well, he's probably being truthful because he didn't want to tell me about the heroin when it's like, girl.
Yeah. Killed people, you see, you know? I mean, you see that a lot too when it's like killers who have had like same-sex relations and they're just like, but I'm not gay. Like, I murdered that, but I definitely did not have sex with.
Right. It's like, is this important right now?
Yeah.
No.
But like, if that's the piece, like, they'll admit to murdering, but like, if it implicates them as being gay in any way, they're like, no fucking way.
And that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, you could have said that you were at home playing chess or whatever, but you had to say that you were out carjacking. And it was such a, it was so dumb, and it fell apart immediately because they were like, what did you take? Oh, we didn't find anything. He's like, there were like 1,000 cars. You didn't take any change.
No,
you didn't
take
any, you didn't steal a radio. Like, girl, get out of here. Like,
You're
telling this to cops who, these poor cops probably have to chase down 1,000 carjackers. So boring.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, get out of here.
Exactly.
Teenagers are dumb. So eventually they confessed, mostly. They both ended up blaming each other.
Okay.
So to this day, it's not really known. Like, they can tell that both knives made stab wounds on the body.
Okay.
But the way that that Tori Adamczyk told it, Brian made him do it, and vice versa.
Okay.
And I think that Tori said that Brian had like made him stab her like after she was already down. Like, so really minimizing his own part in it, which is what they both did.
Sure.
So it's hard to tell if there's any validity to either one. I say no.
Yeah.
But you know, that's pretty common of young offenders. And partner crimes in general is that they just blame it on each other. So they ended up telling what really happened. I just think this is really gruesome and gross. They had gone over that night. During the tour, they had asked to go into the basement. And they had snuck away and unlocked the basement door.
So
that they could come back in.
Okay.
There's also tapes. So they were always filming everything. There's tapes of them like on the way to the house.
Okay.
Being like, we're going to kill Cassie and Matt.
Okay.
So they talk to each other the whole time.
Does this come back to the snuff film thing?
Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. So when the cops find all of the evidence later, because they do find the videotapes.
Yeah.
They said that it was just, and you can see all the tapes online.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of think, why wouldn't they have filmed the murder? I kind of think that they did.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't released, which is fine.
Which, right, would make sense.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I just feel they had the camera with them. There's a really scary, like, really off-putting tape, which I think, like, with the documentary I watched about this, with the interrogations, I think this was the first thing that they put, is the two boys, right after the murder, driving away. Like, we just killed Cassie. Wow, that was so awesome that we just killed her. We stabbed her and she bled everywhere and she was screaming. Like, and they're both like super excited and talking to each other about it.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like, why would they have not filmed the murder? Like, it's one of those things where it doesn't really matter. And I understand for the family's sake, if that did happen, never ever saying anything about it and just sort of destroying the tape or like keeping it, filing it away for evidence.
But at the same time, like, did, when they went to trial, did they plead guilty or did they both plead not guilty and like blame it on the, do you remember?
They,
Because they did they have like a full trial with like they evidence did. And everything? So they probably pled not guilty, trying to like
think so,
pin yeah. it on the other.
They did try to pin it on each other. I don't remember exactly how they pled.
The
I'm sorry.
Only thing is like if that's the case where mm-hmm. they're like, yeah, we literally like have you then on they video could have doing used it. The they would have that's used it at very trial. True. They 100% would have used it at trial.
Theory yeah. over.
Yeah. Yeah, I get where you're coming from though.
That's true. See, and that's why I'm so glad you have this legal knowledge, because I'm just like, I don't know, they probably filmed it.
Yeah, yeah. But it does make I could also see that being like we don't like in some, you know, teenage boy uh-huh. young rationalization way being uh-huh. like, well, if we don't film it, like the actual act, like they wouldn't have evidence, right. even though they have the leading right. up and the afterwards.
And that's true. And a large part of both boys' defense, because you are right, they did plead not guilty. I just remembered.
Yeah.
Was like, well, we were doing this for a movie. So right. all this stuff we were talking about, it's just a movie.
Right. And
they
without
said that
the
they
actual
were going
like
to cast Cassie and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Without the actual act,
right.
then they could still like
right.
use it as a defense. The other thing I could see uh-huh. too. Because, again, they're teenage boys. Like you said, they're kind of right. nerdy a little
right.
bit.
Oh, yeah.
Is planning to film it. And then when time
getting
came,
too
like,
excited.
Yeah, getting
or
too excited or not being
able
or
to
not
hold
being able
it.
To, right.
Yeah, and that like, totally makes sense. Yeah. It's just something that, like, I've looked at this case for, like, a couple of years. It's always mm-hmm. something that's kind of been in the back of my mind is that, not that I would want to see it because that's
right,
horrible,
right,
but it's
right,
like,
right.
is there more footage out
yeah.
there that we're not aware of?
Yeah.
Like, it's just interesting to think about, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I'm a weirdo. So they had unlocked the basement door so that they could get back in. When they left and said that they were going to the movie theater, really, they just parked down the road, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, if you're planning to do crime, don't do that.
No.
Because people will see your car.
Yeah.
They changed into their black clothes, gloves, and their ghost face masks. They then re-entered through the basement door, banged a bunch of stuff around. I think it was said that one of them threw like a flower pot. They were like pushing stuff over.
Yeah.
And they cut the power with the breaker box. So they were specifically trying to lure both Cassie and Matt downstairs
okay.
so that they could get them into the basement.
So they would have murdered Matt had he been
right.
in the house still.
Right. And okay. in some of the tapes like leading up to the murder, they do talk about like, oh, is Matt supposed to be there? Oh, okay. Like then we'll get him too. Like it's
yeah.
almost sort of like an afterthought.
Yeah.
I think that they plan to kill Cassie specifically.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like teenage drama subtext where
right, of
Brian
course.
Did admit, because the cops pretty, as soon as it was like, okay, you did something, the cops pretty easily were like, oh, you had a crush on her and she rejected you.
Yeah.
Which is what happened. And then it was revealed later that Tori also had a crush on her and was rejected.
Yeah.
So not Cassie's fault at all, but it's like that kind of is like, of course they were going to kill Cassie because they're these deranged, you know.
Right.
And they're
right.
mad at her.
He's but, in but their mind. Like, she's the one that like
that
slighted
rejected
them.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's like,
that's
hey, if
ridiculous.
Matt's there too, then he can get it. Which
right.
is like, geez. Yeah.
Right.
Boys are horrible.
Boys are stupid.
They are stupid and they never get any smarter. So they turned some of the lights back on after it didn't work and they couldn't lure them downstairs. This part, I don't know, like it just sends shivers up my spine. When Matt left the house and then called them to be like, where are they at? They were whispering because they were in the basement.
Yeah.
With Cassie upstairs. Like, I know that's kind of like obvious. Like, of course that's where they were, but I hate that idea. It freaks
someone
ooh,
being in
gross.
Your house without you knowing.
Ew.
Yeah.
It's gross. You don't pay bills in here. The boys then decided to go upstairs and ambush Cassie.
Sure.
Which is what they did. The knives that they brought, the hunting knife and the dagger, were both from a pawn shop. They had gotten them specifically for this crime.
Yeah.
This was the first thing they were going to do.
Yeah.
They then drove to nearby Black Rock Canyon and partially burned. They tried to. They kind of half-ass, like, lit it on fire. Partially burned some of the evidence, not enough to really do anything,
yeah.
and then buried it in the canyon, which, again, there are police photographs. Please use discretion while you look at this because there is blood in some of the pictures. I don't want
sure.
anybody to get upset.
Sure.
But you can see pictures of, like, their masks and the knives and the videotape.
Okay.
Which I'm like, why would
you
not,
put it
like,
with
right.
the rest of the
put
evidence.
It all nice and neat together.
A little bow on top, yeah.
To the police. Like, children.
Oh my gosh.
So during the trial, They both, of course, blamed each other.
Right.
Said that they were not responsible and they were influenced by the other one. They also claimed to have been negatively influenced by the horror movies.
Okay.
And violent crime in general. Something that had happened recently to that was the Columbine shooter.
Yes.
And both of them, but particularly Brian, had an unhealthy obsession with the Columbine shooters and would talk about them all the time.
Yeah.
And I think the correlation of like the tapes, like Columbine is so heavy with like all of the tapes that the killers made. I'm like, of course that influenced.
And even in that case, like a big part of Columbine was the references to BTK.
Right.
Natural Born. I'm sorry. Yes. Natural, not BTK. Natural Born. MBK.
Oh, Natural Born
Killers.
I was like,
not
BTK.
Not Dennis Rader. I'm sorry.
I was like, wait, actually, really?
It's getting close to my nap time, so you know. No. There was a lot of references to Natural Born Killers like, and like that influence them. On them.
Right.
So it's interesting. And, you know, obviously we've seen a lot in history, like the references to the Columbine shooters as, you know, as much as I hate to say it, as inspiration for some of these people that came afterwards. You know what I mean? Like.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's definitely not a new court strategy to be
like,
but
exactly.
The things they watched. And what's interesting is Brian Draper actually kind of recently, I think it was maybe only a year or two ago, had an interview from jail, like a phone interview.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth listening to, but you're going to roll your eyes a lot because it's very like, I didn't know what I was doing. And I was sad. So I thought I'd kill people
about
it. It's like, girl, go to therapy. But he makes a lot of what I think are BS claims that said that like, oh, I wasn't even into horror movies or film at all. And then I met this kid. It's like, you've been into horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, you don't meet this guy for a week and then put all these posters up in your room. Like, get out of here.
Right.
Like, so he still is claiming like very lessened responsibility, which I think is ridiculous.
Silly.
There were plenty of warning signs for the two boys. They would talk about horror, getting away with the perfect murder. They would talk about Columbine a lot. Tori in particular had a lot of, he was definitely well known to the administration. He would get in fights. He was very physically violent and would seem to have rages out of nowhere. Which, if you're listening, that's a red flag.
It is.
Don't hang out
Big
with people
flag.
Like that. But the school knew.
Yeah.
Which I think is messed up.
Yikes.
In 2007, on April 17th and June 8th, respectively, Brian and Tori were convicted of first-degree murder, life without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
And then 30 years to life for conspiracy to commit.
Okay.
They were both 17 at the time.
Yeah.
They are both...
So they tried them as adults then?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is part of... So they've both appealed several times. It's always been not, like, disregarded. It's never worked. They're both still in jail. But the fact that they were tried and convicted as minors has come up in the appeals a lot. And I think...
They were tried and convicted as adults instead of minors? Or they were tried and convicted as minors?
I don't think I'm saying it right. Just the fact that they were so young...
That they were minors and they were being tried as adults.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
Legal age.
No, that's fine. I'm asking because they have... Like, the Supreme Court has since then.
Right.
Because it was, like, later into 2010s, I think. Come out with stricter rules regarding the sentencing of minors. But
which
because... They got a life in prison sentence.
Right.
Honestly, like, it does come down to the seriousness of the crimes, too, and the fact that they were 17, which is basically 18. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, exactly.
It'd be different if it was somebody who was, like, 13.
Right. It's pretty, I mean, I feel like this case, like, I understand how they had reasonable doubt, but at the same time, like, I feel like this is pretty open and shut.
I think so, too.
And they did end up confessing, so it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But it's easy to see why this case pulled so many parallels to Scream. Like, even if you don't take into account the fact that they used the ghost face masks and that was, like, their favorite movie to watch together.
Yeah.
The town of Pocatello, it's not really a small town, but it's kind of a quiet town.
Yeah.
When you Google Pocatello, that's, like, one of the first. Like, it is forever linked to this horrible murder.
Yeah.
And in Scream, the small town of Woodsboro was changed forever by this murder. The killers in masks, the teenage victims,
yeah,
all of the suspicion.
Yeah.
I think it's very similar to Scream.
Yeah. Well, and okay, so like, spoiler alert, if you've never watched Scream,
please, I'm going to say Scream.
You should have watched it by now. It's been out forever.
Yeah, damn it.
But there is also, like, in the movie, the guys who are the killers are like two bros.
Right.
Hanging out.
Right.
Trying to murder people.
Right.
Like, it is. That's why earlier when we were like, well, it's kind of a Bonnie movie. It's because literally the two killers are like bro buddies that
exactly
murder. Like
exactly, and they're like, oh, this is just a thing we're gonna do. It's
yeah,
like, okay, why yeah. don't you be normal.
One of them was that. Matthew Lillard.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately Matthew Lillard was not Sorry. In the real case.
Yeah.
I mean
that's fine.
Well,
I'm happy.
That's true.
That's fine.
Him and everything.
He's still unproblematic. So I'm like,
yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's very unproblematic. So I'm just gonna keep
everything I've been
hoping
hearing
that
with
continues.
Like fans.
Yeah,
like he's just such a
yep,
sweetheart.
He's good people.
Super sweet. So unfortunately, the one victim of this was Cassie,
right?
Along with her family and the town of Pocatello, which is now inexorably linked to the horror movie franchise forever.
Damn.
Yep. That is the story of
oh my gosh.
Brian Draper and Tori
wow.
Adamczyk and Casey Jo Stoddard.
Yeah.
And they call them the Scream Killers,
ooh.
Which I kind of think sucks. Okay, yeah. I think we should stop giving killers fun names. They wanted to be famous. That's what they wanted. And now it's like, that's your favorite movie and we're calling you the Scream Killers. Call them the lame fucking lame-o killers. And then people will stop killing. The end.
I mean, I get down on a good killer name. I also get
well,
down.
I like it.
I also get down on a good like governmental operation name. You
oh,
know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Yup.
I do. I do like a good one.
What's the like Stranger Things one?
I don't know. I don't remember.
The like LSD one.
Oh, MK Ultra?
Yeah, that's cool.
MK Ultra is
pretty
cool.
Name.
Yeah, but they also had like, what was the one that
I know
we,
exactly what
there
you
was
mean.
One that we talked about on the show that was like Operation
about what?
Baby Rattle or
oh,
Operation.
Yeah.
I forget what it is.
Yeah. No. Like something like totally innocuous.
Something so stupid. I love those. I love those.
Like who comes up with those?
No.
It's probably their intern.
What an interesting story.
Thanks. So they both, they both remain in jail to this day.
Good.
They both continue to blame each other.
Good.
But they suck. The end.
So I'm going to preface this by saying mine's a shorty. It's a
Love
little
it.
Shorty shorty. But before I actually get going into what I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to take a look. And I do this occasionally when I just like
ooh,
come
I'm
up
excited.
With. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to take a look at something that I sort of stumbled on in my research. I went down a little rabbit hole.
The best.
Because people attempting to emulate movies specifically is like a lot more common than I would have thought. Like I said,
know.
It's not really like video games and stuff. It is movies specifically.
Right.
The occasional TV show like
yeah.
Dexter.
Dexter.
You know?
I was just about to say Dexter.
Yeah, but mostly movies.
Yeah.
But while I was like trying to decide what I wanted to cover this week, I tripped over something called the Matrix Defense. Are you familiar with this at all?
I think so. Like,
you could probably surmise.
I was gonna say
from
they,
what it's
they're
called.
Like, well, I'm not committing crimes because this reality isn't even real. Prove
yeah,
it.
Basically. So
the dude bro argument.
If you are like super young or just unfamiliar, The Matrix is a film franchise with the first film being released in 1999.
Oh wow,
the original Matrix movie, where essentially, and you can tell me if I get this. It's a little more complicated than this, but
my husband would know this way better than me.
Essentially, have you ever you've seen The Matrix? Though.
I've seen it,
and you know, like
yeah.
the pop culture references
yeah.
and shit. So, basically, AI takes over and imprisons humanity
Topical.
In a neural interactive simulation called The Matrix. Humans don't really know this. They're just
yeah.
like living their lives in the simulation, assuming
lives.
It's real.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally people like break out of the simulation and they've sort of joined up in this group that is attempting to save everybody from being perpetually imprisoned in like this digital system.
I think that was great.
That's like the very like top Perfect. Level thing yeah. of the Matrix.
Yeah.
Obviously starred Keanu Reeves, like, mm-hmm. and a bunch of other folks.
That one really hot 90s chick.
Yes, with she's the really yes, hot in that she's movie. Still around. She was still in the movies too. I think the newer ones.
Yeah,
and there, you know, there's been movies that have spawned it. Off from oh, that.
Yeah.
You know, there was I don't even know how many sequels, and then they did like two, three years ago. They finally brought it back for another season. Yeah, so
I was forced to watch it.
That's The Matrix, and I originally was gonna cover a case that covered The Matrix defense, which is kind of how I stumbled on this. So. The Matrix defense is based on the idea of a defendant not intending death for their victim because they would believe the victim is still alive in another reality.
Oh.
So, like, this is the Matrix. Like, we are in the simulation.
Uh-huh. Right.
And by killing somebody in this part, they would then still be alive and awake.
They're going to be like, in the resistance.
The real world.
Right.
Quote, unquote, real. Okay. Real mm-hmm. world. Right.
That's very silly.
So this sort of led me to discover there's a bunch of instances where people have used the Matrix defense.
I was
defense.
About to ask. If it's a spoiler, yeah. don't say it. But has that ever fucking worked? like ever? Like,
well, not as a straight up not guilty.
Okay.
Like not as a straight up like not guilty, you're free to go.
But it's like factored in.
Right. Okay. So for example, Tonda Lynn Ansley, who shot her landlord several times in Ohio
Valid.
In 2002, she claimed that she thought her landlady was drugging her, invading her dreams, and attempting to kill her.
I hate when they do that.
This is going to be weird because it's a lot of landladies, too. So,
oh, I love it.
They used the Matrix defense in her case, and she was found not guilty by reason of insanity.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Vadum Misesges,
yeah,
who confessed to chopping up his landlady in San Francisco in 2000.
What is with these landladies?
I know. During his defense, he claimed the victim gave off evil vibrations and he was afraid of being sucked into the Matrix and he was declared mentally unfit to stand trial.
Fair.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is what I mean by like not a straight up like not guilty.
That makes sense to me though. Okay.
You're laughing at the evil vibrations.
I am.
That's you give like, off evil vibrations.
I was going to say if
that's my vibe.
I was already evil. Wifed up by the time like Tinder became a thing, but yeah. I think evil vibrations would be my Tinder bio.
Oh yeah.
Evil I give vibrations. Off evil
I
vibrations.
Like that. I should use that. You should. Make it my Tinder bio.
This is how Vicky found her husband.
Oh God. It's probably how I find evil a murderer.
Perfect.
That's how they're going to find me on Tinder.
Perfect.
In 2003, Joshua Cook shot and killed his adoptive parents after looking at a Matrix poster. So
that one,
that is not like the ultimate, precipitating factor in like him killing his parents. He had been watching.
He had a break with reality.
Something else. Yeah. And then like the last thing he looked at as he was leaving the room was the Matrix poster.
He was like, whoa, it's all there.
Yeah.
Imagine if it had been a different poster.
Yeah.
If it had been Paddington, he probably would have been fine.
Yeah, right. So his attorneys were planning on, because of that, his attorneys were planning on using the Matrix defense, but he ended up pleading guilty.
Oh, okay.
Like, good. So they didn't even get that far. And then probably one of the most well-known cases, which is that of Lee Malvo, who was one of two of the DC snipers in 2002.
Oh,
So in total, Malvo and his accomplice, John Malvo, gunned down 30 people.
It was father and son, correct?
Yes.
That case makes me mad.
And following the shooting, Lee Malvo, from his prison cell, he shouted, "Free yourself from the Matrix." He told the FBI to watch the movie if they wanted to understand him. I'm pretty sure that one had some like conspiracy theory extremism, like right-wing extremism stuff in it too.
Yes.
Like that was more of like the red pilling like thing. So they,
which is mental illness. In
right. So they both went to prison. Mm-hmm. They're still in prison. They got multiple life sentences for all of that. So the Matrix offense is, I just find it really interesting that this is this idea that keeps coming up. And it is a very modern idea, right? Like, they were not talking about living in a simulation in, like, 1980. You know what I mean?
I was.
You were not even a sparkle in your parents' eye.
How dare you? Never been a sparkle.
Me neither. Me neither, girl. So the Matrix defense is actually said to be the descendant of the taxi driver defense.
Oh, I don't know what this is.
It was used by John Hinckley Jr.
Oh.
In the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan. Claiming that his obsession with Jodie Foster made him do it. Jodie Foster is, of course, in The Taxi Driver.
I don't think that he needed a motivation to kill Reagan. And I think that he needed to follow through.
We're not going there. We're not going to go there.
Cut it out.
We'll never advocate. So that's, like, the modern descendant.
Right.
There's a ton of these, like, more quirky defenses. I think the most recent one that I can remember is affluenza, you know, when that kid crashed the car into a bunch of people or whatever, and he was like drunk, and then they claimed affluenza because he was like rich and didn't understand consequences or some shit.
Like he was so far removed.
Yeah. So you remember that one.
Yes.
There's a bunch of them that have been used in the last few years, including the King Kong defense. That was used in the 2008-2009 Pirate Bay trial.
Oh.
The Twinkie defense.
Love it.
Which is used in the 1979 defense of Dan White. The Chewbacca defense, one of my favorites. So are you a fan of South Park?
Kind of.
Okay. So this particular defense, the Chewbacca defense, gained a ton of popularity after South Park did a satire of Johnny Cochran in a 1990 episode called Chef Aid. And it's this idea of, like, not necessarily disproving the prosecution's case, but confusing the jury so much that they err in your favor.
Wow.
Which is pretty much what he did in O.J. Simpson. So, So that's the Chewbacca defense. And then finally, the Shaggy defense.
The rapper or the Scooby-Doo character?
Well, it is named after Shaggy's 2000 hit single, It Wasn't Me. Famously used by R. Kelly in his defense of peeing on women. So, like, that's cool. Yeah. This is like the rabbit hole that I went down. And again, you know me and legal things. I was just like, I love this.
This is so interesting.
Yeah.
It feels like something that can be attached to so many different things. It's just kind of that idea.
Yeah. And these are not necessarily like officially recognized defense strategies, right?
Right.
But because of their being used more than one time, at least, right? Like they do get these sort of nicknames for being kind of, you know, quirky.
Right.
The quirky defense.
Quirk.
So with all of that being said, I wanted to look at a very early example of a movie defense from all the way back in the 1920s.
Oh, wow.
So this is the era of silent films. Are you like a big like silent? I get that vibe from you.
Yes, I do. Offended.
It's just a thing.
It's totally
the fact
thing.
Is you're a 90-year-old woman in a 30-year-old's body.
I should crochet, but I don't know how. I can't figure it out.
I'm going to learn how to crochet.
I can't
That's
get
my
past
next
the
goal.
Chain.
Yeah. No, I do. But I do feel like you would be into sort of the silent film, film era.
I love
old Hollywood.
I used to work at a theme park, like a historical. Oh, yeah. She knows what I mean. It's this local.
It was a Western theme park.
Yes. Theater kid.
Don't think like Six Flags theme park.
Yeah. No, think more like a fourth of the size and
no roller coasters.
There was a roller coaster.
I truthfully had never gone to that side
of
it.
Wow. Canceled.
It's gone now. Wins that fight?
But it was like a historical wild west. Well, historical kind of
quote unquote white American history. Historical, yeah. We'll say.
Yes. Wild West themed.
Very, very Cowboys and Indians.
Yes.
Deal. Yeah.
Yes. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Like my Vietnamese brother played the chief of the Indians because he was the only non-white person who worked there.
God.
Yeah. Really bad. Really bad. I don't condone it.
Horrible.
They told him to speak Indian.
Oh, God.
Just mumble and cross your arms. I'm like, that's bad.
Oh, no. Okay.
we can cut that out. They had a museum inside the theme park as well.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of old paraphernalia, and they actually showed us some of the, like, the first movies.
Oh, cool.
And what I was thinking about when you said, like, the silent movies and stuff. When the first movie was premiered in, like, you know, the South Texas or whatever, part of the movie with the projection screen was a train, like, kind of coming at you.
Yeah, obviously, I remember this was
way before 3D, but people had never seen anything on a screen before.
It flipped.
And people actually got up out of their chairs and shot at the projection screen.
Yep.
So they have the first...
That's really cool. Yeah. I know which one you're talking about, too.
You can see, like, the bullet holes in the screen and stuff.
That's so funny.
Super funny. So I was like, well, that kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah. So you may be able... You might know some of these people that I'm talking about and some of these things I'm talking about. So, like I said, this is the era of silent films.
Yes. It's,
and by 1927, actor, writer, and director Todd Browning was sort of hitting his stride at this point. So by 1919, Browning had signed with Universal Studios. Are you familiar with him? Because he did a lot of stuff.
It does.
He did
a lot of stuff. Sounds familiar.
I'm sure I do include some like names in here, so you might know some of these. So he had signed with Universal Studios by 1919, and there he was able to direct some of the era's top female actors, including Edith Roberts, Mary McLaren, and probably most notably Priscilla Dean, who was like huge at the time. In fact, Browning made 9 films with Priscilla Dean at Universal, including The Virgin of Stamboul, The Exquisite Thief, Under Two Flags, Drifting, White Tiger, and The Wicked Darling, which also starred another big star, Lon Chaney.
Oh.
Lon Chaney is huge at the time. Yeah.
Yep.
So in 1925, Browning leaves Universal and decides to sign with MGM.
Okay.
And he, like, one of his conditions at MGM was that he was to bring Dean with him, Priscilla Dean.
Oh, okay.
Dean. She wanted to bring her along.
That's so cool. So they like transferred her contract.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And so while he was there, the two of them made another 8 critically acclaimed. Yeah. Critically. And this is, you got to remember too, like the rate at which films were coming out, like churning out.
Yeah. This was like the new thing.
Yeah. And because it was so heavily demanded, I mean, that was the time of like movie of the week.
Right.
Type things. And they were just like. Coming the speed at which now you're talking about, you know, a film series like Lord of the Rings that has 3 movies taking 8 years to really, you know, that would
like
be like
minutes.
3 months of time in the 20s. So
there was a lot of like people who were hospitalized for like exhaustion and stuff, overwork.
Yes. Yeah.
All of these poor filmmakers and everything are just being
churning them out.
Ragged.
So they go to MGM. They make another 8 critically acclaimed films, including The Unholy Three, The Mystic, The Blackbird, The Road to Mandalay, and finally, the film that we're going to talk about, London After Midnight.
Oh.
Have you heard of that? Okay. So I was unfamiliar, totally unfamiliar, which is surprising to me because London After Midnight is broadly considered to be sort of the holy grail of the silent film era as there are no known copies of it.
Yeah, it's lost media.
That there's no known copies of it that still exist.
So sad.
In 1965, an electrical short in Vault 7 at the MGM backlot ignited the highly flammable nitrate films, killing at least one person and destroying the entirety of the vaults, which included the archived prints of silent films.
Right.
There's a ton of shit lost.
Yeah. I feel like history nerds are like the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah.
That's how I consider that as well. It's such a loss. There's certain actors and actresses whose entire filmography was completely wiped out. So we have no record of them, which is just so tragic.
Yeah, yeah. It was just the entire thing.
Remind me to back up my hard drive.
Yeah, right. I know. It's truthfully hard to fathom that happening now because now, one, especially with like media, everything is digital for the most part. Or if it's shot in something analog, it's converted to digital.
Right.
And we have backups of backups of backups of backups. Yeah. The second something hits the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You will be, for the most part, be able to find that thing forever, you know?
Which
so,
is good.
Yeah, it's super good. But unfortunately, one of the films that was lost in this fire was London After Midnight. And from that point on, the film's been lost to time completely.
So sad.
So back to 1927. Browning makes this movie, London After Midnight, The film is based on a writing by Browning himself called The Hypnotist.
Okay.
And from the stills, it seems like 100% my shit. Like, I would have been very into it. I'm going to show you. Okay, so we're going to talk about this guy.
Uh-huh.
But this is the main character.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Does he look familiar? They call this the bat pose. Okay. It's
looks like the Babadook.
Yeah, if you Google London after, he does kind of look like the Babadook,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah.
If you Google like London after midnight, and this is Lon Chaney,
yes,
in this.
Yep.
Like these are the very, you see the stills with the guy with the wide eyes and the sharp, yeah, sharp teeth.
Yeah, you guys will recognize it right away.
You'll know exactly what we're talking about. Like, this is the best. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I love this.
We should watch some of those. Like,
well, I can't watch this.
I know I've been paying attention.
But
I mean, in general.
God damn it, Rachel. Don't give me hope and strip it away.
What are we talking about?
So, yeah, this, it looked like it would be something I would
very
be very
creepy
into. Yeah. And I did try to like find the shortest plot synopsis
uh-huh
that I could, because some of them just go on and on and on.
Yeah, they're a little batshit.
Yeah. And so I found one on Silentology, not Scientology.
Okay. Oh, good.
Silent, like silent films. Silentology.
Oh, that's cute.
Had, it's cute until it's like, well, it's really close to Scientology, maybe we should change
right
it, but it's
right
fine. So they actually had like the best synopsis. So here's what the movie was about.
Uh-huh.
Quote, Roger Balfour is found dead in his mansion of a gunshot wound, the apparent cause being suicide.
Dun, dun, dun.
The mansion sits vacant for 5 years and then gets two spooky tenants. They're suspected to have played a role in Balfour's death, and Inspector Burke is summoned to solve the 5-year-old case.
Oh.
He believes hypnosis can be used to make murder suspects relive past events.
Okay.
Very problematic now.
Love
it's like
it.
Past life regression.
Yep.
And soon he's able to solve the mystery of Balfour's death, and we learn just who the spooky tenants are, too.
End quote.
So that's like the movie.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
it is silent
good
film, but it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But this was, the movie itself was not actually as popular as Browning and Chaney's like previous work.
Oh.
With a lot of the critics saying it was sort of a step down from his previous work.
Bummer.
But it still managed to make over $1 million at the box office.
Right.
Which is huge,
yeah,
for then.
You're, I was going to say.
I think the production, some, I want to say, I remember seeing like 200,000, 250,000, mm-hmm, to make it.
Oh, wow. So they gained a lot back.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
awesome.
And a million in 20s time is like,
right,
billions.
Yeah.
You know.
All the money.
So flash forward to a year after the release of the movie.
Okay.
Police discover a man named Robert Williams in London's Hyde Park on October 23rd, 1928.
Okay.
Williams was found lying next to the body of his girlfriend, Juliana Mangan, and was disoriented and holding a razor covered in blood.
Doesn't look good.
When he finally came to and saw police were standing there, this is from Ranker, quote, Williams pointed to Mangan and cried, I did it. She has been teasing me.
Oh.
End quote.
Okay.
Obviously things did not look very good, and police,
uh-huh,
police arrested him,
yep,
immediately.
Why?
I don't understand.
Isn't that suspicious?
No. Blood? Whose blood? Not my blood.
Not mine.
Yeah. So that's kind of weird.
Uh-huh.
Very strange. So later, Williams goes on trial at the Old Bailey,
mm-hmm,
where he attempts to use the movie London After Midnight as his part of his defense. So Williams,
the movie made him do it.
I mean, pretty much. Yeah.
Wow,
so Williams claimed that he had proposed to Mangan, but she had said no.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because some of the research was like, well, they were friends and then he proposed to her. But I know that's like a courting thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But
he didn't really like
maybe
date.
She was like, whoa, I didn't.
Yeah. Well, I think
like
they were dating, but she,
okay,
just didn't. I don't know. She didn't want to marry him. So she says no.
She was like, I just wanted free lunch.
Yeah. And the last thing that he remembers was hearing Mangan whistling. again from Ranker, Williams said, quote, "Then I felt as if my head were going to burst and that steam was coming out of both sides. All sorts of things came to my mind. I thought a man had me in a corner and was pulling faces at me. He threatened and shouted at me that he had me where he wanted me."
What? Oh, my God.
Weird.
Yeah.
Williams then claims that he saw visions of Lon Chaney's character, the man in the beaver hat, which is the wide-eyed, iconic, pointy-toothed guy.
Yeah.
So he said this character, and he was in the film called The Man in the Beaver Hat. He didn't have a name. Appeared to him, telling him to, quote, "carve up a woman with a razor," going on to say the character physically appeared before him and forced him to kill Mangan. That was from Den of Geek. So
why would Lon Chaney do that?
Fucking Lon Chaney. He's a national treasure.
I love him.
Attorneys for Williams defended his actions by saying the man in the beaver hat character was so terrifying in the movie that it drove Williams to insanity.
Wow.
Which I could see.
Now I wish we could watch it.
I know.
And they weren't, I mean, it's the 20s. It's not like they're watching, you know, blood and guts. So it might have been really scary.
And that's the thing. Like, I could totally see that being an accepted defense because, like, movies and entertainment like that were still so new.
Right.
That when you saw stuff on the screen, like, there, I feel like the line between reality and cinema was way more blurred back then. Now it's like, okay, obviously we're going to the movies. We know the technology and everything. Right. But, like,
but even, like, as recent as, like, what was it with The Exorcist, the 60s? Like, people were throwing up and fainting and, you know, having a heart attack. So it's like, people can definitely be influenced by what they see on screen.
Well, and there's the classic example of Orson Welles and War of the Worlds on the radio and people being like,
in their homes.
Oh, my God, aliens are coming. Like,
I'm sorry. I think that's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. Listen.
I've always loved that.
I know. Like, I don't think it's beyond reach for at least the public. Like, if you were in a jury trial or something, for the jury to be like, yeah, I mean, I could see being so scared by this movie.
Yeah.
Like, some of them probably have seen London and After Midnight. And
they were like, that shit was really fucking scary.
Yeah. So, like, I could see that being an accepted defense. But
the jury hadn't seen the movie.
Yeah, right.
So they really go to jail.
Now, this is likely like one of the earliest times that media entertainment was used to back a defense in court.
Wow.
And at the end of the trial, the jury was hung. So clearly, like, some people were like, I mean, maybe he isn't. This movie maybe did make him insane. Who knows?
Yeah.
Now, the following year, in 1929, Williams went through a retrial using the exact same defense. Well, they were a hung jury. So,
that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So they used the exact same defense as they did the first time. But this time, the jury found him guilty and sentenced him to death.
Sheesh.
A later review of his conviction resulted in Williams' sentence being reduced to life in a mental hospital.
Fair. Okay.
And it seems like... It seems pretty clear that Williams was responsible for Mangan's death. Like, I don't think there's any disputing that. But there was also, like, clearly a hurdle in convincing a jury that a film made him do it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Obviously, with that first hung jury, people were still conflicted. Yeah.
Jeez.
So, even if you...
I just can't get over him, like, just on a leisurely walk, a perfectly normal man. And then he's just like, Lon Chaney. And he's like, kill your wife. Well, not his wife, but kill that lady.
Yeah, because she said no.
Right. I'm like, interesting.
I mean, it's like, another case of he was literally found next to the body.
Right.
With a bloody razor. So
and then when he got to jail, he was like, oh, shit, actually, I don't want to be here. This place sucks.
And he said, I did it. Like, but she made me do it. You know what I mean? So London After Midnight did continue to be showed to the public.
Oh, my God.
After that, for a little while.
Trigger warning. Might make you kill your wife.
But because Williams used it in his defense, viewers became worried that it might be like cursed or that it was dangerous. Because now they could market it as the film that drives you insane. Oh, you know what I mean? And it definitely added to like the mystique of the whole the whole thing.
Yeah.
But of course, that only increased when the only known copy to exist was destroyed nearly 40 years later.
Right.
But that is the story of London After Midnight.
That's a good one. Yeah. It just makes me sad. I want to watch that movie now.
They do talk about, did you see Renly? Did you guys watch Renly? That was the most recent one with Nicolas Cage. Mm-mm. And the guy who's like, he's Dracula, and it's about his assistant, Renly.
Renfield.
I'm sorry.
I've
been watching
movie.
Game of Thrones. That's why Renly's on my, like, I'm
Renly
sorry.
Baratheon?
I've been watching Renfield. Game of Thrones. Renfield. I haven't watched it. I want to.
It's so funny.
But they do talk about Nicolas Cage's teeth in that movie are modeled after Lon Chaney in London After Midnight. So like, there's still an influence
they're
that
keeping
it has.
Alive.
And they did a few years ago, I want to say it was in like the early 2000s, maybe like 2002. And I think it had to do with TMC, Turner Movie Classic.
Okay.
Somebody attempted to put together the closest reconstruction of what the movie would have looked like that they would have gotten from like stills and
that
stuff.
Would be great.
And that's like the closest thing. I saw it on YouTube. I'm going to try to put the link in the show notes. But, like, it's interesting that people are even going to that length because it literally is going to be, like, the closest thing you can see.
Right.
Because you'll never – like, you will literally never see the movie.
Oh, so sad. Yeah. That makes me so sad. That's awesome. Yeah. That's a good one.
Thank you. So before you try to use a movie as a defense for doing some bad shit
– Don't do that.
Don't do that. But maybe check out this podcast.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Ellen, and I'm scared we exist in the Matrix.
I'm Jaslyn, and I'm bad at ad-libbing.
And you're listening to High Expectations, the promo. For our international listeners, you can appreciate our cute New Zealand accents. For our local listeners, you might bump into us in the street 3 times in the same hour. Our podcast is about pop culture,
sexuality,
relationships,
interesting hobbies,
banter, and ragging on each other.
You can find us on
Apple Podcasts,
SoundCloud,
Pocket Casts,
Podcast Addict,
or anywhere you might like to find podcasts.
Yay, please subscribe.
Goodbye.
Hey guys, I'm just going to jump in really quick to say we have decided to take April off for our own mental health and sanity. So we will be back with brand new episodes in May. We will see you then. All right. Well, that has been our show.
It has.
Thank you so much for coming on again, Rachel.
Anytime.
It's been great having you.
Oh, it's been great being here. I'm having a great time.
No idea what is going to happen. So
who does?
Yeah.
Except me.
Yeah.
I know everything.
As we've discovered, she wouldn't tell me. Yeah, no. But it has been a joy having you on. I really,
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. It's
I appreciate you.
Yeah, stop it.
No.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Stop.
We do not have anything coming up, as far as I know. But keep an eye on our social media for any updates.
Yeah.
If you liked this episode, you can find more just like this at badtastepodcast.com. But for now, our sound and editing is by Tiff Fullman. Our music is by Jason Zakshevsky, the Enigma. This has been the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. We will see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Bye.
It was as if a wave of evil washed over this town.
We are all